God of the journey, be with us. And a long time ago, and far away, my story is still told. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. I remember that day. It was hot. The sky provided no shade. My friend and I had just come back from drawing water. We couldn't believe our eyes. Walking into our land was a small group of strangers. As they came into focus, we saw that they were not our kin, not our clan. They were our enemies. Their small donkey wore the weight of numerous cooking pots, and one was filled with judgment on our people. You see, Israelites looked down on us, Moabites. They said our line was created through incest, and then, therefore, we weren't acceptable. At that moment, the Hebrew family represented the whole tribe of Judah, and their presence provoked uncomfortable feelings. Enemies or not, here they were. Later, we understood they didn't come by choice, more of a forced migration. Famine was the main crop in their land. They were hungry, and everyone needs to eat. It was a more peaceful time in the judges' rule, so that likely made it easier for them to come across the border. The man's name was Elimelech, his wife's name Naomi, and the names of the two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, the house of bread in Judah. And they moved into our neighborhood. I remember my mother griped, "Why our place?" I had no inkling how intertwined our lives would become with the foreigners. Did I mention they had two sons? I was an ordinary young girl living an ordinary life. I noticed the boys. And I hope the tall one, Mahlon, noticed me, Ruth. I was open to being friends. Speaking our story is our people's way of passing down our experiences and understandings of life, of how it works. It's the main way we teach our children about life, its joys and sufferings, ways of moving through struggles, how to be in family relationships, acceptable behavior. We teach them about our gods, the unexplainable and mysterious. More often, my story is told to women and girls because it is a woman's story. But men and boys are welcome to listen in. The themes are universal, perhaps even defining moments in our lives. Loss, change, and suffering, pain. My body still remembers this trip. There was a lot of dry days, and water was nowhere to be seen. Radical decisions to make. Risk, relationship, poverty, marginalization, prejudice, survival, companionship, the seemingly hidden power behind the universe. Come, step into the story with me. A memory ember of your own life might quicken with recognition and understanding. Having been told many times, my story is a mixture of personal reflections of the original time. And often in retelling, some insight arrives and my perspective changes a little. Thus, the retelling of the story becomes new. Understanding is gleaned from the reflections of others who have noticed things as they have listened to my life. As I've looked at the foreground, they noticed what was happening in the background or on the edges of my life. I hope you have someone like that, a friend in your life, a companion who listens and sees like that. I feel a little bit like a time traveler, sharing my story so long after it happened. Here it is, 2014, And my story happened over 3,000 years ago. And I discovered it's been written down. Very unexpected. My world was shaped mainly by males. A woman's value, personhood, was attached to having a husband. Women were voiceless and powerless. We were marginalized by social systems, traditions, and our local gods didn't make many provisions for us either. It appears something has changed. Thanks to those who became the holders of my story, who saw its worth, divine care, and purpose. It's pretty scandalous to have a sacred text named after a woman, you know. Bet someone took a lot of flack. Maybe a priest had a wife pushing for it. I pray that women are heard and respected in your day. I certainly never would have predicted that my ordinary Moabite life, a foreigner married to a Hebrew, would impact anyone else. I wonder if you ever have the feeling that your story doesn't matter. I can tell you from experience it does. Every story is part of a larger story. Mine is really the story of Naomi, my mother-in-law, her God, and me, at the beginning of her suffering, and then ours. Death was a frequent thief. Breath stopped, and death carried Elimelech. And Naomi was left all alone in a foreign land, with no family to comfort and support her, no one to counsel her. Eventually, her young sons were looking for wives. Where was the matchmaker? Over the years, we kids dared to get to know each other. The walls of suspicion and animosity slowly began to crumble. We no longer defined ourselves as us and them. We became friends. And as the gods would have it, and some negotiating with my mother, who was a single parent, I married into the Hebrew family. Scandalous. To many, I was marrying the enemy, forsaking my culture and religion. Ours wasn't the first intermarriage, but they weren't always looked upon with joy. I married Mahlon. He did notice me. We hoped for children, but were not yet blessed. We were engaged in our lives when death took up residence again, and within weeks of each other, Chilion, my brother-in-law, Orpah's husband, died, and then my Mahlon. We were left destitute. Darkness enveloped me. I missed my husband, the sound of his breathing next to mine. Unsure if Naomi's God Yahweh was close by, I whispered, "Are you here?" We reeled, lost our equilibrium. Who were we? We were widows, the leftover pieces of our husband's lives. Naomi had lost everything. She was left without a provider, without a future lineage. She was empty. Life no longer had meaning. If you've ever lost someone, you know there's a period of disorientation, disbelief, questioning. Why? Why is this happening to me? What did we do? Who am I now? Where is my beloved? I don't know how to do this. Who will help me? In our vulnerability, we clung to each other, forming a questioning tree. More questions hung from the branches. What was to become of us? How were we to survive? Who would care for us? When Naomi heard in the fields of Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of her people by providing food for them, she decided it was time to go back home. We had buried our dead, packed the little we had, and set out for Bethlehem, about a 7-day journey. We prayed for safety. We wore our grief. Fatigue made it hard to put one dead feeling foot in front of the other. We'd not traveled far when Naomi turned to us with tears welling up and said, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. Find comfort there. May the Lord show kindness to you as you have shown to your dead and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest, security in the home of another husband." Her caring for us was twofold. She wanted to release us from any obligation to her. She believed we had a future in Moab. On the other hand, if you've ever been a foreigner or a stranger, you can understand Naomi's hesitation in having us go with her. It had not escaped her how hard it was going to be for her to return home with two alien daughters-in-law. How was she going to explain us? It would be a rough journey for all of us. I imagined we wouldn't be embraced as kin. Then she kissed us. Goodbye. We embraced on the dusty road. We wailed, touched, and shook our heads and said to her, "We will go back with you, with your people." But Naomi insisted, "Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? With me, there is no security for you. My future is hopeless. Am I going to have many more sons who'd become your husband? Return home, my daughters. I'm too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them?" She had a point. It was absurd. A thought shot through my mind. Marry another Hebrew? Impossible. "No, my daughters, it is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has gone out against me." Over the years, I witnessed how Naomi understood the Lord God. She complained a lot, which was incongruent with her name, Pleasant. Yahweh was blamed for pretty much everything that had gone wrong in her life. According to Naomi, God was either for us or against us. Nothing happens by chance. Sometimes she saw God as cause and effect, punishing her with suffering for reasons she did not understand or for wrongdoing. And with that understanding, the cloak of guilt was a perfect fit. Returning home, she saw herself to be utterly alone with no future in sight. Naomi faced Judah with the human experience of despair slung over her shoulder. "Go back," she said. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but I clung to her. "Don't be too hard on my sister-in-law." On that road leading to Judah, we stood on the edge of our lives. Internally, we were searching for the way to go, how to make our own journey, and wanting the best for each other. There was no blame throwing, judgment. We loved each other and wanted to figure out how best we could care. Separate, all go to Judah, stay. Some may think Orpah took the easy way, but her return was still a journey of darkness. She had no idea how her life would unfold. Would there be a husband? True, she was returning to familiar landscape, yet she was changed. She was a widow, and our traditions do not look out for widows. I hope your world is doing better with caring for the vulnerable. I wondered what would become of her. A time of famine brought our families together, and death pushed us even closer. As we huddled there, clarity grew within each of us. I knew in the deepest part of my heart that I would not separate myself from Naomi. Orpah was reluctant to leave, but in the end, with much sorrow, obeyed Naomi's appeal to stay in Moab. We stood in the crossroad, holding each other, sobbing over our hopeless lives, and filling with fear of what was to come. We knew we may never see one another again. Another kind of death. We promised to send word. I prayed this mighty Yahweh have the capability to reach into the land of Moab and watch over my loved one. Around the table, we heard stories from Naomi's family tree, stories of her people and their God, the God of promise and their covenant bond. Naomi told me that as kids, they would imagine who they might be like. We heard all about the call of Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rebecca, Jacob and Rachel, Moses in the basket, the burning bush. The big story was the Exodus, where Naomi's God rescued the Israelites through Moses and helped them escape from Egypt. She told us that Yahweh led the people by cloud during the day and a pillar of fire at night, and how they were hand-fed manna from heaven every day. Imagine. This God seems to always be making a way for them, looking out for them, present with them, no matter where they were. God seemed to be fully at the center of their life. Sometimes Naomi's reaction to God kind of mystified me. And then she said, "Look, there goes your sister. Go back with her." Pressing into her, I said, "Don't urge me to leave or to turn back from you." I knew that that my home was with her and with Yahweh. The price was high. In the eyes of my people, I was choosing death over life. I broke with my family, my country, national identity, and renounced my faith. I left with nothing. No status, no call of God, no possessions to speak of. From that day, I vowed my loyalty and my love, my life beyond death, not to a man, but to a woman and our God. Young and fertile, I committed my life. I tried as best I could to comfort Naomi and assure her I would never leave or forsake her. I would die for her. Certainly, I would be buried beside her when my time came. I loved Naomi more than the life I had planned for myself. Did I feel brave? No. But in hindsight, I was. One must risk or nothing changes. Here we were, women making decisions that were usually made for us by men. Was I afraid? Absolutely. But my love risked deeper than the fear that scrambled up my spine. And we turned towards Bethlehem, a Hebrew widow returning from Moab, accompanied by her alien widowed daughter-in-law. Our silence was full. How would she explain me? My loyalty to her overflowed. We'd made a bold decision that would shape the rest of our lives. Each step drew us closer to her home. Pausing, Naomi drew in a big breath. Exhaling, she said, "Look, there's my home, Bethlehem." We made it. What would be our fate? Sometime later, hot and worn out, we set down our few possessions at the home of a relative. Eventually, word raced through the village, "Naomi is back. Naomi is back." And the community of friends came. They approached with curious hesitation. "Is that you after all this time?" And direct as always, Naomi let them know what was happening to her and who the source of her emptiness, affliction, and misfortune was. She expressed it in one word and action. She renamed herself, Mara, and her skin leaked bitterness. But she was home. We arrived in Bethlehem in April, just as the barley harvest was beginning. And in spite of ourselves, we breathed in the promise of bread.